Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. They're the exclusive distributor of Master Meter AMI-AMR technology. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. Today, we visit another small town in Louisiana, just a short distance off the Gulf Coast, and we talk to a mayor who is inspired to live a life of public service from an early age and is now leading his community in his still relatively new role as mayor. We're going to go talk to Mayor Eugene Folcard in the small town of Franklin, Louisiana. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. Soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. But life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by Public Software. While the name may sound new, Public Software has been helping small towns, cities, counties, and utility districts for over 50 years. They provide integrated software to help manage utility billing, accounting, and additional services. They help organizations accurately calculate, collect, and distribute money, print and mail statements, and effectively manage budgets. Some say they are a B2B company, but Public Software is focused on H2H, human-to-human connections. With decades of proven success and reliable service, let them make your software applications work seamlessly with the human interactions in your community. You can learn more about Public Software and what they can do for you and your organization by visiting www.publicsoftware.com. That's www.publicsoftware.com. Public Software. Strong relationships, stronger communities. All right. I am in the city. I'm going to say that correctly. City of Franklin, Louisiana. I'm in a very nice building we're going to talk about and a very large office I'm going to ask about. I'm with the mayor of Franklin, Louisiana, Mayor Eugene Folcard. Mayor Folcard, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Thank you, Mayor Seal. First off, I would like to thank you and also welcome you to our city of Franklin. We were very excited to have you come in when our PR director, Tiger Verdon, told me that we were going to be doing this. I was very excited to do this because I think anytime we have an opportunity to present our city in a positive light, I think this is great. From one small town, small city mayor to another, I think we both could attest that these are great ways to really get your message out there.
Definitely want to make sure people are more aware of small towns that don't, like I said, don't get a lot of press sometimes. Exactly. But sometimes they're a little off a beaten path, but I always say it's well worth the trip.
Yeah, so. That's right.
Well, I kind of described the building I'm in. Now, you have a very impressive mayor's office. I joke with the mayor that I might try to move to Franklin and run against him just for the size of office he's got. This is very impressive. And there's a high ceiling in here. This is an old historic building. So if to the audience, if you hear a little bit of an echo, that's why. But it's just so cool to sit in some of the buildings and some of the offices I get to sit in on some of these interviews. So instead of a sound stage or some kind of, you know, sound absorbent room, I'd rather sit in these places and have these conversations. So I'll ask you if you could, even before we start talking about you, describe this building, because I think you said it was an old schoolhouse and now it's City Hall.
Yes, as really a matter of fact, this was one of my elementary schools. I had attended Crowell Elementary. The school was built in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, it was a high school. It was Franklin High School, then it became, you know, Crowell Elementary, and has served the city well. After Hurricane Andrew hit the city of Franklin in 1992, City Hall had been on Willow Street. The building was somewhat congested, very tight space, so former Mayor Sam Jones and the council moved to have City Hall moved over here to Crowell Elementary. And it did a couple of things. It preserved this particular old school.
Yeah.
It is very, very historic and is iconic here in Franklin.
Yeah.
And it has given us an opportunity to continue to breathe life into this school and also into the central part of Franklin. It's easy access for many of the citizens to come up here. Many of the citizens walk to City Hall whenever they're coming in to pay some of the utility bills,
right,
or to see us about whatever services they need or whatever issues they have.
Right,
right. Easy access.
Some folks do have issues. They want to bring
fine.
To City Hall.
Exactly. So again, this is a very historic school, and I think it has served the city well, and we would hope that it continues to serve the citizens of Franklin well for many years to come.
Yeah. And I think you said it was built around 1911.
It was built somewhere in that time period.
Well, it is very cool. And as I was pulling up to arrive here today, I thought, man, it looks like an old schoolhouse. It's three stories. And so I said, and their sign said City Hall. I said, man, I wonder if they're sharing that with someone else. And I asked that when I came in. I said, no, this is all city office.
All City Hall. And as a matter of fact, we're in the process of renovating the third floor, which will become the former Governor Mike Foster archives.
Oh, okay.
So all of his papers and all of the papers that he had while in office will be housed on the third floor.
That'll be nice.
Sort of like a, you know, a museum to
right, the governor's library kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. But it also gives us an opportunity to continue to renovate the third floor.
Yeah.
And so we're moving on.
Well, that's very cool. So anyway, I wanted to pause and at least talk about this because it's been very interesting to me, the different locations I've been able to conduct these interviews in. And this was a impressive building. So I wanted to kind of paint the picture for
people.
Thank you. All right. Well, now that we've told the story of the location, let's talk about the story of you. So I'll start with the same question I start on every interview. Were you born in Franklin, Louisiana?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was born in Franklin, Louisiana.
Okay.
52 years ago.
Okay.
And I've been here all of my life, with the exception of 4 years. I left to attend college, Southern University in Baton Rouge. And after I finished college, I came back home to attempt to make a difference. One of my college professors in college, pretty much all of us was from rural communities at Southern University. And he asked everyone, what do you plan on doing when you graduate college?
Yeah.
You know, half of the class said they were heading off to bigger and brighter things, large cities, and so on and so forth. And then he really impressed upon us, why do you all want to leave your communities?
Yeah.
He said, you all are being college educated to give something back to your communities. And that really resonated with me to come back home and attempt to make a difference, you know, in my community. And that's one of the reasons why I opted to come back home to give back and attempt to improve the quality of life in our local community.
Well, talk about what life was like growing up here in Franklin as a child, as a young man, and what made it such a draw. Obviously, you used the word home already a couple of times, and that's the reason you came back, because it was home.
Yes.
So what is it that made it home growing up?
I guess
not everybody wants to turn around and come home after college.
I guess part of the thing that wanted me to come back, and one of the things that resonated with me growing up in this community, keep in mind, you know, we're in the Deep South.
Yeah.
I think it was the sense of community, the sense that everyone knew everyone,
mm-hmm.
and when I played Little League baseball in the mid-70s. These were integrated baseball teams, yep. And some of my best friends that I played ball with are still some of my best friends as of this day. Chris Barrio, for instance, who's our recreation director, he and I played Little League baseball together at 9 years old.
Yeah.
That's one of my best friends in life.
Yeah.
And I'm saying all of that to say we have and still have continued to rise above whatever tensions there may have been throughout our society, but I've never really witnessed a great, great deal of that in Franklin. You know, you see little subliminal messages with it, but the bottom line is that we've always continued to get along well in this community as best we can.
I kind of want to chase that because that's an interesting comment, because you can go to some towns and there's some very clear racial divides and racial tension just bubbling over.
Right.
It sounds like what you're saying. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that while there's still some of that, because we're still humans and there's still some of that if you were from Franklin, that was the more important thing than where in Franklin you were, what the color of your skin was. And so that those friendships and that sense of community kind of transcended race, at least to some extent. Exactly. Like I said, I don't want to make it sound like it was a utopia.
Well, it has transcended that.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have to open the lines of communication and open the lines of harmony, open the lines of getting along with one another.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really, really makes that difference. And we can begin to continue to turn the corner on.
Right. Efforts always have to be made, but it sounds like it was a good foundation for that, right?
A good foundation. That's it, exactly.
Well, let me ask this. Now, when you graduated from high school here and you went off to college for those 4 years, obviously you came back and that was, you were kind of inspired. You talked about the professor that challenged everyone in the class and you really took up that challenge. But were there some thoughts? Were there some maybe, hey, let me go off to the big city and go off in fortune and glory and that kind of thing?
Well, when I had come back attempting to make a difference, and I think I have had an impact in career choices and things that I've done when I came back, I had friends that were in Dallas, Atlanta, Chicago, that I was in college with that I knew were making, you know, extremely higher amounts of income. But the bottom line is that was the only time I may have had some second thoughts that, you know, maybe I should have branched out and explored some other options.
So you weren't necessarily tempted while you're in college, but after you graduated, came back, you said, hey, these guys went off to the big city.
Exactly.
They're making a little more money.
Exactly. And then I, you know, my dad once told me, say, you know, son, sometimes it's not all about the big bucks.
Right.
It's about what you can do to have an impact on humanity and your community.
Yeah.
And that also resonated with me. So here I am, you know.
Well, when you talk about, because I usually get to this part a little later in the questions, but you said you came back with kind of a mission and a goal to make a difference. So what were some of the things you got involved in as a just college graduated young man coming back home to
Franklin? Well, when I had come back, one of the things, I was named the CFO for St. Mary Community Action, which was a nonprofit. We had Head Start, USDA, commodities. We kind of serve all aspects of the community from the cradle well into, you know, our senior citizens.
Right.
And one of the things that I wanted to do was give back to the community, and serving as CFO at that particular company gave me an opportunity to really dive in into making a difference with helping people get their homes weatherized, working with them with the LIHEAP utility program. So it was a number of things that were done to make a positive impact in our local community with housing initiatives and different things that we did to try and impact the community. That was one of my ways of also giving back to the community by offering my talents and expertise in the field of business and getting the community involved as best we could.
I should have asked this before. What did you end up getting a degree in college?
Business administration.
Okay, I was going to say it was probably along those lines.
Yeah, business
served
administration.
You well. So going and managing an organization was exactly what you were looking to do.
Right.
Did you come out of college knowing that you wanted to help kind of more of in a nonprofit sector type of way?
Yes, from the standpoint that I really wanted to have, I guess, my hands in the dirt, more or less, as far as really, really making a difference in the local community. And that was one of the ways that I felt like I could really make a difference, yeah, working in a nonprofit type of venue to really have an impact.
So you were community service oriented from day one when you got back home. But at some point, obviously, since I introduced you as the mayor, you got involved in local government. So
yes,
when did that get home, and what was it that motivated you? I think you told me you were on the council first.
Yes, I was on the council. But one of the things that had got me, that really started piquing my interest or scratching the surface, was the fact that my father was very, very involved in local politics along with his brothers. My dad was the first African-American ever elected in the history of Franklin.
Wow.
When he won a city council seat in 1978,
okay,
and went on to serve, you know, six terms. Watching him serve the community and being involved in local government also really piqued my...
You got to see it in action,
exactly,
and kind of get a little bit of a behind-the-scenes
look. Yes, and
look,
the fact,
yeah,
that I saw how he served all the people all the time and many midnight phone calls to, you know, help different citizens out with, yeah, different issues they were having.
Yeah.
You know, really, really, really got me excited to also maybe follow in his footsteps.
So those midnight phone calls didn't turn you off too?
No, it didn't turn me off, because it's about serving people.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
And, you know, attempting to make a difference.
Yeah.
That was really, really the main thing that really got me interested in serving people and making a difference.
So what year did you first run for council?
2006.
Okay.
I ran for council, and even prior to that, I had served on the Franklin Charter Commission, where we rewrote the city charter back in 2000, where we rewrote the city charter, revamped it, and came up with a, you know, brand new charter,
yeah,
to take Franklin into, you know, next,
right, yeah,
20, 30 years.
Update some things,
yeah,
as we need to do from time to time. So you were involved on some, I guess I'll call them volunteer boards, even before as an elected official.
Exactly.
So involved in local government,
exactly,
in those ways.
Also serve on the Franklin Foundation Hospital Board. I'm still on the board. Hopefully within the next year, I'll be stepping down when that term comes to an end, because it keeps me pretty busy serving as mayor and also serving on that particular board. It really takes up a great deal,
yeah,
of time,
yeah,
but, you know, but it's all about service and continuing to give back.
So you were elected in the election 2006. And let me ask this, just to kind of, you just mentioned the charter, so I'm sure this will go to the charter. How many council members are there in the city of Franklin?
We have five council members.
Okay. And are those at large or districts?
We have one at large who serves as the mayor pro tem.
Okay.
And then we have four single member districts.
Okay. So you won your district in 2006.
Right.
And
as a single member district holder,
okay,
District C.
And those are four-year terms?
Yeah, four-year,
okay,
terms.
So I assume you ran at least one more time. I'm trying to get my timeline here.
Yeah,
so 2006
I ran,
started in 2000.
So it was 12 years that I served on the council.
Okay. And so I guess just to get it, you know, obviously community service, that's a theme of this conversation already. But were there some specific maybe initiatives or specific goals that you said, I need to be at the table on the council, and here's the things I want to make sure we get done and move
well,
forward?
Even now, of course, infrastructure was one of our big things.
You're not the first person to say that one.
Yeah, and infrastructure was one of our major concerns,
yeah,
because we had a number of mandates that we had to address,
yeah,
in our water plant.
Okay.
And we've addressed those concerns. And, you know, as we addressed those concerns in our water plant, eventually we had some issues with our sewer plant that we're addressing as we speak.
Yeah.
So infrastructure is always paramount. When I first got in, we had infrastructure concerns with the water plant. We also had, in 2002, we had a very, very tough storm that hit this area, Hurricane Lily. Lily flooded a great deal of Franklin south of the railroad tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So State Rep Sam Jones and the council and the mayor, former mayor, they also really pushed hard to get a floodgate installed on the Franklin Canal. And thank God we had an opportunity to see that work firsthand with Hurricane Barry that just hit back in July. It held off nearly a 7 to 8 foot storm surge,
yeah,
that would have pushed in had it not been for the floodgate. So, of course, infrastructure is always paramount,
yeah,
pretty much with any city or municipality, because if you don't address your infrastructure concerns, it will eventually catch up with you if you,
yeah,
don't start addressing those concerns as best you can.
And you're in a place where you said storm surge. A lot of people hear that on the Weather Channel when a hurricane's coming, and it doesn't really affect them. But how far are we from the Gulf right now?
We're about 8 miles from the Gulf.
Yeah, so you're not way far inland. Exactly. Where you get a storm and some wind. Exactly. Ocilla is fortunate enough to be middle South Georgia, so we've gotten some bad storms the last couple of years, but we don't have to worry about storm surge. So the idea of dealing with that, I know that's a big thing. It can do some serious damage to a town, and the recovery is serious. Other things that you really want to do, infrastructure is good. Yeah, it's going to be a big thing.
Yeah.
It's something that's you're never going to be done with that, because there's always going to be improvements.
That's always there.
So it's about staying on top of those things.
Exactly.
That I've come to see. What other initiatives did you
want? Well, in addition to our infrastructure concerns, of course, economic development is always paramount. We're always looking for ways to bring businesses in. We've been very aggressive with addressing the infrastructure concerns along Northwest Boulevard. When we address those infrastructure concerns along our Northwest Boulevard corridor coming into Franklin, mm-hmm. we were able to have new businesses tap into our infrastructure in that area with Metal Shark and Golf Craft. As we continue to attract and work to secure and keep these different businesses as they come into Franklin, one of our main concerns have been housing.
Yeah.
So we're also attempting to address our housing concerns. So we have some housing initiatives that we have ongoing. One of the things that we've been very aggressive with has been our blight. With our housing mitigation and blighted initiative, we've been able to begin tearing down many of the old structures that we have in Franklin with the housing. If they cannot rehabilitate and rehab those homes,
you got to clear them out.
In a very diplomatic and nice way, we're asking those citizens to please, look, let us work with you all. You all work with us so that we could have these houses torn down so that we can move new housing stock. As you look at doing scattered housing developments, hopefully that will start attracting some developers to come in and do some scattered site housing on some of these lots that houses have been torn down, so that we could bring new residents into Franklin. As we continue to rehabilitate some of the older houses, hopefully that could attract the investors and entrepreneurs to come in, rehab these houses, we get more people back into Franklin and keep it moving. I really believe with some of the houses that we've sold in Franklin within the last year, we've sold about 10 houses, not the city, but the real estate market. They've sold about 10 different houses in Franklin where people have been saying, oh, nobody's coming to Franklin. But guess what?
If there's some
available, selling houses because many of the people have seen that we're moving in an aggressive manner to tear down many of these old houses. We're cleaning Franklin up. We have a Project Front Yard initiative where we're asking the residents to start cleaning up your front yard. Let's worry about your front yard, one yard at a time.
Yeah.
So as they see that we're making these different moves to clean Franklin up, to aggressively address the blight in the community, address junk cars that we have scattered out throughout Franklin. At first, I thought I would get a lot of resistance on that.
No, people want to.
But
it's a tricky balancing act.
They have bought into the fact that, hey, they're trying to make a difference in a positive way.
Well, you've got people's personal property. You want to respect those rights. But at the same time, the way someone allows it to dilapidate or just pretty much fall in
and
some affects the people on either side. So you're affecting the value and the quality of life of everyone around. So that's part of, yes, we're all individuals and we have individual rights and property rights, but we're also a community living very close together. And what one does affects all the others, especially the closer you are. So that's tricky, but necessary to go after it. And you mentioned economic development. People don't think of housing or blight immediately connected, but it is.
Yeah, they all are connected.
It's everything's interconnected. So.
Exactly.
All right. Well, you talked a lot about the things you did as council. You were on council for three terms, so 12 years. And at some point, you decided, or you became somehow another way, the mayor of Franklin. So yes. In what year did you run for mayor?
I won the seat on March 24th of 2018.
Okay.
Sworn in on July 1st, 2018. And so
why did you decide to go from council? What motivated you, now I want the top job?
I guess after a while, you realize you've hit a glass ceiling and you've done all you could possibly do from a council perspective.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that I had some other initiatives that I really wanted to begin pushing through, and there are many things you can't do from off the council side. I had to get into the administrative side of becoming the mayor in order to push some of those things through, and here I am.
Yeah. And I should have asked this before. When you ran for council in 2006, did you have opposition for that district seat?
I had opposition the very first time I ran, the second time, and then the third time I was unopposed.
Okay.
So, I did have some opposition.
Just one other person?
It was just one other person.
Okay, so you're able to win without a runoff. Right?
Exactly.
And when you ran for mayor just last year, did you have opposition then?
Yeah, I was head up against another opponent.
Okay. Was it the former mayor?
No, it wasn't the former mayor. He didn't run for re-election.
Okay, so it was open. It was not an incumbent running.
Basically, okay. Right.
All right, so just one other. So you had opposition along the way, so people did have a choice, and they chose you.
Right.
Okay. Well, now that you're the mayor, and you're still in your first year. Actually, you've done one full year now, and in your second year. What are some of the things you have done or started doing? Because I know sometimes initiatives take time. It's not like you're going to get everything done in 12 months.
We've gotten a great deal of things done. We've continued to address some of the infrastructure concerns with some water tie-ins that we've done on Roseville Street and Norman Bauer. We've addressed a number of the concerns with our sewer plant with an ongoing rehabilitation project that we have going on. We've begun to aggressively address, again, like I said earlier, our blight and mitigation program. Hopefully with the sale of many of these adjudicated properties, we could also get folks to buy in and also rehabilitate some of these houses so that we can continue to get people in those houses. We've collaborated with a nonprofit that have done a particular subdivision where they've rehabbed about four or five houses that will bring residents in. So we've done a number of things to collaborate and work with other entities and organizations to make a difference in our community. People have begun to buy into our Project Front Yard with cleaning the city up. We have done some things a little bit differently from a strategic marketing standpoint. I've brought in Mr. Ed Tiger-Verdon as our public relations director so that I could really get that message out
and
help
market
us sell
town.
The city.
Yeah.
So that we could get people into the city in the form of tourism and people just coming in for an overnight stay at one of our beautiful bed and breakfasts that we have here in Franklin. So we're doing things aggressively but differently to attract and bring people in. Our annual Christmas on the Bayou has really taken off. We're doing a Boo on the Bayou for Halloween. We have our 200th year bicentennial coming up. We have a grand celebration plan for New Year's Eve where we'll have fireworks, bands, a complete family-friendly event so that we could bring in 2020 and begin the celebration of our bicentennial in the 200th year of Franklin. So we're doing things a little bit differently as far as marketing and really getting our message out. And I think it's beginning to pay some big dividends. You know, even for the storm that hit, we really got the message out to the community of what was going on. We kept them very informed on what was happening. Communication is the key.
Yeah.
For many, many things that we've been attempting to do in Franklin.
You mentioned PR and marketing and selling the city. That's so important. And I've noticed small towns are starting to do a much better job of that. There's some that have been doing it great for a long time. But building your city and having a better product by going after blight, doing some economic development projects, bringing jobs. But if you're not effectively communicating that, then you got to sell the product that you're building too. And it's kind of that combination. And really, you're talking about communication, not about marketing and trying to get tourists to come, but communicating better with the people already there in emergency situations. That's something that's you do that better. That's a huge asset. That's a draw. People want to be in a place where the communication is good. So, yeah those are some good things. Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little, still keep talking more about Franklin. Yes. But before I do, I kind of want to pause here. And I've got a series of get to know you questions.
Okay.
So I'd like to ask, so that people can get to know the mayor. Maybe they think they know you, but they'll learn something new in these. So I've got four quick questions. So the first question is, do you now have or have you ever had a nickname?
I've always had a very unusual nickname that one of my baseball coaches had given me along with my brothers, my biological brothers. Once my baseball coach found out my nickname, it just stuck. And it's it, I-T, from the pronoun it.
It?
Sort of like from the Monsters. I don't know why they started calling me it, I-T. So they had been calling me it. If someone who I haven't seen in a while that I grew up with,
yeah,
and I hear it,
you know, it's those baseball days.
Because that was my nickname. So I had a very unusual nickname.
So they just called you it?
It. I-T.
Okay.
And that was my nickname.
So it's a childhood name. It didn't carry on, but that's the way you can tell. You're being approached by someone that knew you in days gone by.
Exactly.
It. All right, next song. What would be your go-to karaoke song? So if you had to sing in a karaoke contest to defend the honor of Franklin, Louisiana, what would your karaoke song be? Doesn't have to be. People try to relate this to the city. So it doesn't have to be a song that just, you know, really talks about the city or anything, but just your favorite karaoke song to sing.
Signed, sealed, and delivered by Stevie Wonder.
It's like you had that one ready. Do you frequent karaoke night?
I don't frequent karaoke a whole lot.
But when you do.
Unless Tiger was to get me involved with that. But I've always enjoyed, if I ever had to do some karaoke, it would be Signed, Sealed, and Delivered by Stevie Wonder.
I'm going to ask Tiger later if we've got some video of that we can put up on social media. That'd be good. All right. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Guess smothered pork chop and corn and rice.
It took you longer to come up with that answer than Signed, Sealed, and Delivered, I'd just like to point out. But smothered pork chop and rice. Okay. All right. Final question. If you could attend any concert, any singer, band, group, duo, any kind of performer, whether they are dead or alive, whose concert would you want to attend?
I think New Edition.
New Edition.
New Edition.
Okay. That's the first time I got New Edition.
my band back in the day when I was growing up in the 80s.
Yeah. Man. And, I remember New Edition.
You know, New Edition was my group, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for letting me get to know you.
Right.
Small Town Podcast is supported by the Southern Mercantile. Visit southernmercantile.com for a blog about small town living and an online store with a selection of carefully curated goods. The Southern Mercantile. Simple living, Southern charm.
We've already talked so much about Franklin because you came back specifically to serve it, which is a little different. There's some mayors I've talked to, I guess mostly in my Georgia cities, they kind of get picked or pushed into it, but you came back very directly, which is not necessarily there's one path better than the other, but it's just very different. I guess I should ask this first. What's the population of Franklin?
We're at about 7,600.
Okay.
Hopefully, when we complete the next census, we hopefully go up some more.
As we get closer to that number, date, everyone says, we're going to be bigger.
Yeah, so it's right at about 7,600.
Okay.
During the height of the mid-80s, man, Franklin was at almost 10, 11,000, nearly 12,000 people. But as the oil industry began to fall apart during the late 80s and early 90s,
so that was a big
many
part
people,
of
you know, we had a big out-migration of people that left and they never came back.
Right.
You know, so this is where we are right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, even talk about that. Economic development is you've already mentioned it because it's something you want to work on. And I don't know of a single elected official, city, county, state that doesn't say we need to do more, especially in rural areas, to bring about economic development. So you kind of alluded to what used to be the engine here.
Right. Well, I really believe we have to diversify.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of the eggs in one basket, I don't think will continue to work. At one time, we had all of the eggs in one basket in all industry and all in gas.
Yeah.
We have to diversify. That's why I've been so excited about Metal Shark and Gulf Craft, two boat companies that have at least 250 people working at each one of those two boat companies. that's not specifically geared to the oil and gas industry, but Metal Shark, for instance, they do a whole ton of contracts with the government, with defense contracts.
Mm-hmm.
They're building ferries for New York Harbor. In New Orleans, they're building some ferries for Orleans Parish. So they have diversified from the degree that it's not just strictly reliant upon the oil and gas industry. So they have a diversification. As we continue to diversify our economy, where it's not just solely dependent upon the oil and gas industry.
Right.
I think that makes a difference. But hopefully the oil and gas will continue to have a rebound, and our economy and everything else throughout this country will continue to improve.
You said earlier the population used to be a little bigger, 11 or 12,000, but it's still, you said about 7,600 people.
About 7,600.
Well, they decided to stay. So,
exactly.
So talk about, I guess, the character of the town. What makes it unique in Louisiana among the other other cities, towns, and villages of Louisiana?
I'm glad you've asked that, Mayor Matt. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I think has always resonated with this community is the fact that this community has always been very resilient. They've always been a hardworking community, very, very hardworking, work ethic related, and they don't want to see our city go down. So basically, you know, we have a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in the community, and I think resiliency will be one of the biggest things that I've always seen this community have.
I bet you could give me an example, because we just talked about how close you are to the Gulf of Mexico. When a storm comes up this way, you guys are pretty much in the direct line of fire. You know, there's, I guess,
exactly,
the fact that there's 8 miles of shore between here and the Gulf isn't much of a buffer when a big storm comes in. What is the town? Describe that after some of the disasters that have happened over the past. And you've been here so many years. I bet you have examples when you were a child.
As a matter of fact, I was here for Hurricane Andrew.
There you go.
We hunkered down in the old city hall for Hurricane Andrew, for Hurricane Lily, Gustav, Ike. This community, we bond together and we rally around each other. Where neighbors are helping neighbors. The entire community work as a common denominator to rebuild and get the community back on its feet. And we've seen it time and time again. Just recently seen it with Hurricane Barry.
Yeah.
Where the community has rallied and worked to get this community back on its feet.
This question just came to me because being in a place that kind of gets ravaged a little bit every once in a while by such a large storm, has in the rebuilding process, have there been some changes that have happened along the way? Obviously, when you rebuild, you don't have to build it back exactly the same. And I mean that by the structures, but also how you go about things, you know, with the organization, the city and agencies and things like that.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we've always been able to do has been to work well with other organizations, nonprofits, the Red Cross, St. Mary Community Action, Task Action Clinic, to help rebuild, where we collaborate with each other so that there are no duplication of services,
yeah,
so that we can get everything back on its feet. I think one of the better things that has been done in the last few years in this area has been the creation of the Office of Homeland Security,
mm-hmm,
where it's one coordinated effort to issue evacuations, to issue curfews, where they still work hand in hand with the local municipalities, but there's one coordinated effort rather than fractured coordination. And
coordination and collaboration make things a little better.
It makes
it
much better, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's one of the biggest takeaways with all of that, is due to the fact that everyone works together to get everything back to normal,
right,
as normal as we can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are communities or parts of communities sometimes that get ravaged by a big storm or some other kind of natural disaster, and they, because they don't have that resiliency, they don't bounce back.
Right.
They don't rebuild, where it takes much longer to rebuild,
right,
and eventually it happens. But that's a,
right. Right.
a tribute to your community. And,
yes,
and probably, maybe you wouldn't take credit, but probably to a little bit of its leadership as well.
Thank you. Good counsel, too.
That's right. Well, let me ask this, because I'm kind of combining some things together from our conversation. You've been in public service even before as an elected official in Franklin. You came back from college with the intention to do that. And you talk about the character of the city, the resiliency. But now you're in your second year as the mayor, and you've already discussed some of the initiatives, but even several of those were maintenance, the necessary things, the infrastructure, a focus on economic development. I would imagine the answer to this question is yes, and then you can describe it. But do you have kind of a vision for the future? You're just at the beginning of your term, and you seem to be motivated to continue to serve. So I don't even feel like I need to ask you, do you plan to run for re-election 3 years from now? I have a feeling that answer is yes. But what are you already starting to do that's about the future?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you've asked that. One of the things that we really, really, really pushing very hard has been the revitalization of Franklin. Our downtown Main Street, we were one of the first back in the 80s under former Mayor Sam Jones and his administration. One of the first things they did, because downtown USA, it was a dying breed. And
I was even going to ask that eventually, because you talked about that diversification in the economy.
Right.
That downtown restaurant retail destination.
Exactly. They created the downtown Main Street.
Yeah.
It's called the Downtown Main Street Program. Mm-hmm. And the city of Franklin was one of the first in the state of Louisiana to actually become like a charter member of the Downtown Main Street Program.
Okay.
With that blueprint set forth back in the 80s, we're continuing to follow the same model to continue to revitalize downtown Franklin. Man, I would be remiss if I tried to take that credit as far as getting all of that started.
But right.
I plan on taking it to another level.
Okay.
As far as continuing to revitalize Franklin. We've been working with the downtown merchants to create a web page where they could get their products and services and things they do at their particular shops online so that we can compete with Amazon.
Back to that marketing and communication of your city.
Marketing and communication. Yeah. And we've been very aggressive with our public relations arm of the city of Franklin, working with the downtown merchants and working with all businesses throughout Franklin to help revitalize Franklin. I really believe that with our Bayou to Main market that we do for 6 months out of the year, October, November, December, April, May, and June, every first Saturday of the month, we have the Bayou to Main market where citizens can come in, market, and also sell their different homemade items and things that they do with jewelry, necklaces, that sort of thing,
yeah.
Homemade jams. We're doing things that we're allowing people to come in and make a difference. And it's slowly beginning to revitalize the culture and makeup in Franklin. We're hoping to very soon get a cultural district created so that we can continue to do the things we have to do in our downtown area. We have a crown jewel, the Tash Theater, which they have done many plays and things of that sort in Franklin. But we have a good thing going as far as marketing and getting the message out for downtown Franklin.
You just mentioned a cultural district. Right. So I'm curious. And so when you say culture, I'm thinking arts and culture, maybe performing arts. And you actually referenced there's a theater. What are some of the things going on? Because small towns, for better or worse, we don't always have a reputation for being arts and culture districts. So for you to bring that up without me even asking, but go a little more into that about what is the flavor and the culture in Franklin?
Well, you know, we have a multitude of people in Franklin. We would like to pride ourselves on also being diverse. Mm-hmm. That is one of the reasons why we wanted to create the cultural and arts district so that we can continue to showcase our beautiful Tash Theater as far as having, you know, different things available to the citizens in the form of art, dance, theater. We would like to really become full circle as far as the things that, you know, we could offer to our community. When we look at it, one of our taglines for downtown Franklin is all under the iconic lampposts. The lampposts, they were installed maybe in the 1800s in Franklin, and they still have Do Not Hitch.
Oh, from the horses. Well, I see a picture
placard
you pointed
on
out
the bottom of it that's engraved on each post so that,
yeah.
You know, back when it was during the times of horse and buggy, you know, we would encourage the citizens not to, you know, hits their horse and buggy to the lamppost.
So just in case someone's feeling nostalgic and rides a horse to town, they're not supposed to hitch to the lamppost.
Please do not hitch to the lamppost.
And it's still got the sign there just in case.
Exactly. So, you know, we think we have a very, very unique city. We feel like this is a place that if you're looking for nostalgia, you're looking for, you know, a place that you could come into and take a step back and look at some of the architecture or design of some of these Victorian style homes and look at how we've progressed. I think this is your spot. We're unique. Some beautiful bed and breakfast locations here in Franklin. We give someone an opportunity if they're mapping out some of their spots they would like to go to during the summer. Hey, this is your spot.
You know, I feel like you just did what I'm about to offer you the chance to do. But as we close this out, I was going to give you the opportunity that I give all our guests to speak directly to the audience and tell them why they should come visit, or maybe they should just move to Franklin, Louisiana.
We have a low crime rate. We have a great police department, great public works department. We have a great fire department. We have a great city. We're unique and diverse. We are very, very aggressive with attempting to attract businesses to come in and locate into our city. We're trying to change the culture of our housing market here in Franklin. So we're doing things just a tad bit different. Pace is just a little bit slower as far as the laid back atmosphere in Franklin. But at the same time, we're very business minded. We're very aggressive with attempting to attract businesses here. And if you're looking for a spot to enjoy yourself, relax. We have great restaurants, great cultural district that we're working to formulate, beautiful theater, beautiful downtown, iconic lampposts. This is your spot. Please come down and visit Franklin.
Well, Mayor Folkhard, thank you so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast. We'll leave it there.
All right. Thank you, Mayor Matt.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Eugene Folkhard for talking with me. I also want to thank the Louisiana Municipal Association for their support of this episode. After the interview, Mayor Folkhard and Ed Tiger Verdon treated me to a very delicious meal at the local Forest Restaurant. If you get a chance to visit, I highly recommend the Crawfish Etouffee. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors for this season, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, the Southern Mercantile, and our new season sponsor, Public Software, for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.